Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heart warmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. Now, here's your host, CJ.
Everyone, happy Thanksgiving. I'm CJ Liu, and you're listening to Fire It Up with CJ on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour to ignite your best life. Each Thursday on 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, we'll have new voices from a wide range of experts and everyday people about the best ways to make the most of your life. Today, we'll learn more about homelessness and how each of us can find the grace within ourselves to help a person in need. Today on my show, I have Chaplain Craig Rennebaum, who in 1987 founded the Mental Health Chaplaincy in Seattle and is known around the U.S. and overseas for his work with the homeless. Craig does outreach to the chronically homeless that struggle with major mental illness, trauma, abuse, or chemical dependency. Craig has put together a program called the Companionship Program, which helps the most marginalized members of our society through creating caring communities that provide compassion, housing, and health care. And you can learn more about his work and about the Companionship Program through a book that he's written in collaboration with David Paul. The book is called Souls in the Hands of a Tender God. Welcome, Craig.
Glad to be with you, CJ.
I'm so thrilled to have you here on Thanksgiving. Thank you for being here on a Thanksgiving day.
Glad to do it.
So tell me a little bit, in the beginning of every show, what I do is I ask people about what gets them fired up about their work. And, you know, you've spent 24 years working with this population on the streets of Seattle. What's the fire in your belly that keeps you going day in, day out on walking the streets and helping folks?
I think the real beginning of the chaplaincy work went back a few years before we started on the streets, and it had to do with the experience with a fellow that was sleeping on the porch of the church where I was pastor, and I came each day for a week and found him on the porch, and he had boxes of garbage and so on that he'd put out to try and protect himself, he said, from the forces of evil. And he was really frightened and despairing and struggling with some pretty serious mental health issues. And by the end of the week, he had become more and more deteriorated and more frightened, and he was beginning to bring some real toxic materials from junk onto the church porch. And so I asked him to come into the church office for a bit, and he was willing to do that. And I talked with him a bit, and he was willing, he said, to go to the hospital where it would be safe for him. And so I called the county mental health professionals to come and help assess him and get him to the hospital. And they were talking with him, and they said, you know, we can support you. We're glad you want to go to the hospital, but we can't take you. And I said, why not? And he said, well, because he wants to go voluntarily. We only take people if they want to go involuntarily. And the fellow just ran out of the office. He was really disappointed. And I tried to track him down and didn't find him. About 3 or 4 weeks later, I read in the paper that a man had been found dead under one of our viaducts, frozen to death. And it was Sterling, the guy that I had worked with and tried to get into the hospital. And, you know, ever since then, I just have had this passion that if somebody is suffering, particularly on the streets, homeless, struggling with a mental health issue, I want to do everything I can to help that person get the care and treatment they deserve and need, and to help them stabilize in housing and become part of the community again. I think it's just that's what drives me.
Oh, so sad. That's just an awful story. It's the kind of story that just, I just can't even
imagine.
Well,
the flip side is that when we do reach out and when we do make a connection with folks and build some trust and we're able to help them navigate the system, there is care and treatment available, and people can recover and come to stability and return to relationships and community. So there's a lot of good news, but it does take, you know, this basic human connection and outreach to make it happen.
Yeah, and are those policies still intact where they basically, unless a person comes involuntarily, or is that just kind of a weird little part of the system? And is that still the case?
That was a particular policy wrinkle at the time, but it's not uncommon that people who are struggling with mental health issues find it difficult to get into care and treatment. For instance, right now in the state of Washington, in King County, Seattle, where I am, you can qualify for community mental health care if you can get on public benefits and be qualified for Medicaid insurance and meet certain requirements. Well, part of the problem is that, particularly for folks who are homeless, it's difficult for them to make appointments, to fill out applications, to get records together, and meet the criteria for eligibility for care. And so there are still policies and procedures in place and a lack of resources for folks, so that we continue to have thousands of people who need help and assistance but aren't getting it.
Yeah, and one of the things that surprised me after conversations with you is that, you know, when I think about the homeless, I guess I just always ignorantly assume that these are people who were victims of the economy collapse. But that's not really true in terms of people who are homeless. And one of the things that I notice in your materials is you talk about the chronically homeless, and I just wanted to get clarity on what it meant, how you define chronically homeless, and
homelessness,
you know, who are the homeless.
Yeah. Shared by a wide range of people. There are people that have just been foreclosed on or had an economic crisis in their life, or unemployed, or huge hospital bills, who aren't able to afford their housing any longer, and they may be homeless for a relatively short period of time. They may double up with other family. They may use short-term shelter for families or individuals. So there are people who are homeless because they're economically dislocated, their unemployment, economic issues in their life have forced homelessness. There are youth who are homeless, many of whom have been throwaways. They've been tossed out of their homes in conflicts with parents, or the home situation is unstable, or there's been some kind of trauma or violence. So, you know, youth are a part of the homelessness picture. We've got a growing number of folks who are elderly, who are on our streets. As more and more of the population ages, folks have mental health issues as they age. Also, we've got folks who simply haven't been able to continue to afford the place that they've been in. Then there are a whole population of folks who are chronically homeless. They're homeless for long periods of time, homeless for months on end, homeless much of the year or over several years. And of the folks who are chronically homeless, about 80% of people who are chronically homeless have some kind of underlying mental disorder, mental health issue. They may have some intellectual incapacities. They may have victims of trauma and abuse. They may have a serious mental illness. They may struggle with substance issues or wrestle with dementia. So among those who are chronically homeless, those who are on the streets for long periods of time, 80% at least have some kind of underlying mental health issue. And those are the folks I really have concentrated and focused on in the work I do on the streets in Seattle.
Yeah, and from reading your book, it seemed like when you define mental health issues, it's primarily depression, schizophrenia, bipolar. Are those the kind of health issues that we're talking about, the mental health issues?
Yeah, when I started in 1987, that was my primary focus. I mean, folks who were struggling with deep depression, they just, you know, were hopeless, feeling helpless, profoundly isolated. People who struggle with bipolar disorder would swing up into episodes of mania where they might just be absolutely euphoric and grandiose. Folks who are struggling with hallucinations and delusions. And so schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, major depression are the primary serious illnesses we see on the street. But as I've done this work over the years, also recognizing that there are other mental health issues that folks carry with them on the streets. There was a study done at the University of Washington of women at our largest women's drop-in center. 90% of the women reported a history of physical or sexual abuse and trauma in their lives. We have a number of folks who present with their primary issue is substance use, drugs and alcohol. But increasingly, we're finding many people who have multiple mental health issues on the street. So a person who may be deeply depressed may drink or use drugs to try and dull the pain or that sort of thing. So I talk about the mental health, serious mental health issues, including serious mental illness, trauma, substance use.
Interesting. Okay, got it. So the interesting thing, again, is that, you know, I think when we think of homeless in our minds, I think when I've talked to clients, they reach a deep recesses of their greatest fears. It's all about, you know, the economically dislocated. But it seems like those people are just, you know, they're there for a short time. They're not there for a very long time. If they are, or the youth or the elderly, they kind of go on and off the street versus being chronically
right.
homeless.
I think
is that correct?
You know, all of us fear some economic dislocation and losing our homes and, you know, maybe being isolated and alone with no resources. And that can happen to any of us under particular conditions, circumstances. But also, we're all vulnerable to some pretty profound imbalances and disturbance in the way our brains function. And that's not because we're good people or bad people. I mean, we're biologically pretty complex persons. Our brain's the most complicated organ in the body. Hundreds of billions of cells, all of those cells communicating to each other with chemical messengers back and forth. And if that chemistry gets depleted, a person can become depressed. If that chemistry starts, you know, racing, we can be in an episode of mania. If that those messengers start creating hallucinations or delusions, we're simply not in the same world that everybody else inhabits. If we're traumatized,
and let's actually, we want to talk to you a little bit more about that.
Yeah,
we have to go on break, but that is one of my questions that I want to follow up, because I think people have a lot of misconceptions about exactly what's causing this, and that, in fact, all of us are subject to potentially these chemical imbalances. So we're going to talk about that when we get back from the break. You're listening to Fired Up with CJ. Today we have Chaplain Craig Rennebaum, whose pioneering work with the homeless is known around the U.S. and overseas. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Craig about his work experience with the homeless. You can find out more about our guests and listen to this and past shows by going to www.firedupwithcj.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Ladies, are you living an inspired life? Do you yearn for a more passionate, dream-filled life? Here's Linda Joy, founder of Aspire Magazine, and she has a gift for you.
Aspire has launched its Mission to Inspire initiative with a commitment to give away 100,000 one-year digital subscriptions to women around the globe. Every subscription comes with a multitude of free gifts from our team inspiration partners.
To claim it all, go to aspiremag.net today. No purchase necessary. And
feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters. Be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ. as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heart warmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
Are you feeling stuck? Do you want to be free from fears and doubts and finally feel good about yourself, but you just don't know how to get there? Dr. Schaub's Accelerated Breakthrough Program provides you with the tools and solutions to go beyond your limitations and achieve self-empowered confidence. Call for your free phone consultation at 866-903-MIND. Visit CellularWisdom.com. That's CellularWisdom.com.
Live an inspired life.
We're back on Fired Up with CJ. My guest today is Chaplain Craig Rennebohm, who has spent 24 years with the homeless. Before we took a break, we were talking about who are the homeless and what are some of the causes. And Craig was sharing with us that, you know, anyone could be vulnerable to homelessness because sometimes it's just chemical imbalances or disturbances. It's not really whether they're good or bad people, but it's just stuff that happens to us. And before I forget, I want to make sure that everyone knows how to contact Craig. Craig is at www.mentalhealthchaplain.org. And if you go to that website, you'll see on the front page, is it Find Public Appearances? I think you click on that, and you can find out the public appearances that Craig has. Also, Craig is an author of a book called Souls in the Hands of a Tender God, which is available in local bookstores and through the web and from Beacon Press. Craig, did I forget anything?
Sounds good.
Okay, good. So before we left the break, we were talking about who really the homeless are. And you know, sometimes I hear people in the most uncharitable state will say, hey, you know, it's really homelessness can be prevented, and these are just people who've made bad decisions, and they just have to live with the consequences of their decisions. What would you say to those people?
Well, I think it's important that each of us begin with, as best we can, actually listening to the story of folks who are on the street, either directly or through a program like this or other means. Because when you really hear the story of folks who are on the streets, you begin to realize that that a person is homeless because they're chronically homeless because they often have some kind of profound mental health issue going on in their lives. And let me just describe two or three people. I mean, two days ago I was working on the street, and here was a fellow just sitting there, his pants half down, no socks, no shoelaces, tennis shoes off, and he was just, you know, mumbling to himself. And you know, he was probably in his late 20s. And as I approached him, what I heard him saying was that, you know, get away from me, get away from me. And he was hallucinating. He was able later to describe to me that there were these creatures that he felt were about to attack him. And he was trying to hide behind a mailbox. And he had been on the street for a number of days. He had left the housing he had been in. He had stopped taking medication, and he was in this really disturbed state. And that was a matter of some pretty profound imbalance in his brain. Care and treatment are what he needed. Understanding, support, help getting to a clinic and to get his medications started again. Worked with another fellow some days ago. He's now in the hospital. He's had tremendous amounts of internal bleeding. And the story with this gentleman is, yes, he has struggles with alcohol. But before he was born, his mother, while he was pregnant, was an alcoholic. His whole system, from the moment he was born, was geared to alcoholism. And he's had a profound struggle with that issue. When you be a third person I've been working with in the last week is a refugee here in Seattle from New Orleans who went through the Katrina experience, profoundly traumatizing. It's just left her constantly shaking. And I think if any of us went through these kinds of vulnerabilities and fragilities and experiences, we too might likely be among those who are homeless on our streets.
Yeah, so it's about getting traumatized or having things that you have no control out of, it sounds like. I mean, these three stories are situations where, like the medication, does someone, I mean, I guess if someone's hallucinating, do they even have control over taking medications? I've always been curious about that.
It can be very problematic because the very organ, the brain that we count on to help us make good decisions about what will be helpful and healthy for us, it's that very organ, the brain, that's compromised. So when you talk to someone who's hallucinating or deeply depressed or intoxicated, you've got to realize that brain isn't functioning in the usual fashion. But you can still build a relationship of understanding and trust with that person. The fellow who was hallucinating was able to tell me what he was hallucinating, talk to me about what was going on, and was able to understand that I was there as a support and a resource for him. And over time, you know, during that course of that day, we were able to build some capacity in him that he could make a decision at least to get off the street and to try and get some help. Without some support, his brain was just going to continue to go on the way it was. And then with medications, some of that imbalance gets repaired and his normal functions are restored so he can go on with his life. But I liken a lot of the folks I work with on the streets who are struggling with mental health issues, they're not having heart attacks, they're having brain attacks. And, we certainly would not to say to somebody who's having a heart-on attack on the street, oh, you know, pick yourself up and get a job and go find some housing. We recognize that there's a health problem here, and that's the case with the vast majority of folks who are chronically homeless. They have a profound health problem.
Right. So tell us a little bit more about your companionship program. I know that and probably the work that you did with these three people, it's part of your companionship program or your present with the people, but tell us a little bit about the program and its five practices.
Well, the companionship is a way of responding to someone who's suffering, and we're all equipped to be sensitive. Our senses, our eyes, ears, our bodies will pick up when a neighbor, a fellow human being, is struggling or suffering, and that'll trigger emotions of sympathy, empathy, and compassion and concern. And so it isn't something we know have to teach. We're naturally equipped to respond to our neighbor who is suffering. We'll experience concern. And the question is, how do we act on that concern? Because we also may feel some degree of fear or lack of safety or helplessness, not knowing what to do. And so what we teach in the companionship training is to be alert to your sensitivities, to your compassion, to your concerns, and then make a decision. Is this someone that you feel comfortable, able to approach and begin to assist? And that won't be everybody. But the first practice of companionship is hospitality. Henry Nouwen defines hospitality as creating safe space with the stranger. And that means safe for the person you're trying to help and safe for you. So we talk about it, just how to create safe space with a neighbor, with a stranger. And the second practice is neighboring. How do we kind of take off all of our, you know, hats of position and privilege and power and so on and just approach the other person on the common ground of our being human beings? How do we just recognize that we're sharing common time and space together, that we can begin a conversation at the most basic level, just, you know, how are you doing? What's happening? Is there any way I can be of some help or assistance? The third thing I teach is what I call a side-by-side stance. Rather than confront the person, I try and come alongside and to stand with the person or sit with them or kneel with them and just kind of look out at the world together. What are you seeing? What's happening for you? Here's how I see it. Maybe we can work together and figure out something that'll be helpful for you. I'm not going to stand in your way. I'm not going to push you, but I want to look at some possibilities together with you. So that side-by-side stance, I think, is a really important one. The fourth piece of companionship is listening. That's the fourth practice, and I think it's really at the heart of companioning. Just think of the last time, CJ, somebody just sat and was willing to listen to you without a lot of interruptions or jumping on your story and saying, oh, that reminds me of when I, or I think you should do this, but really listen to you. And that's what we offer in companioning, just the opportunity to really listen to another person. And then as we hear their story, we can accompany them on next steps, maybe to find a shelter, food, medical help, support. So those are the five practices: hospitality, neighboring, a side-by-side stance, listening, and accompaniment.
Interesting. So one of the things that I notice about the neighboring part, and which I think is kind of interesting and sad too, is that, you know, the 10 cities, which I know is in Florida, Oregon, Washington, California, New Jersey, the neighboring part isn't working so well with people who are literally living in next to some of these folks in tents. And after the break, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that as well. So you are listening to Fire It Up with CJ. Today we have Chaplain Craig Rennebohm, whose pioneering work with the homeless is known around the U.S. and overseas. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll talk about Craig's experience working with homeless and how you can help. You can find out more about our guests and listen to this and past programs by going to www.fireitupwithcj.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to tap into the healer within? Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. Did you know the real doctor is the source that lives within you, that heals within you minute by minute every day? The healer within is the innate intelligence of the human body. When we cut our hand with a piece of glass, we don't have to command the body to close the wound and grow new skin. It knows how to heal itself. We do have to nourish the skin by disinfecting it and remove the glass, or it cannot heal. The innate healer relies upon us to assist in this healing process. Our role is to identify its needs, provide the substances required for the healing, and remove the obstacle. CRA, Contact Reflex Analysis, is an energy assessment which translates human energy into information. This information provides me with the ability to identify your needs as a healer and to design a specific solution for you. Contact us to achieve optimal health at 888-777-4232. That's 888-777-4232, and visit us at MaryJaneMack.com.
So this may sound simple, but when you're planning a road trip, you have to figure out where you're going first. With the Take Shape for Life program, the destination is living life at optimal health. So what does that mean? It means more energy. It means less medications. And yes, it means losing the extra pounds, which is actually part of the getting there. Talk to a Take Shape for Life health coach who's been there. Listen to their story and their journey. Call 877-520-SIMPLE. That's 877-520-SIMPLE. Results will vary. Talk to your doctor before starting program. Call for details.
Now is the perfect time to learn Tai Chi and Qigong. These ancient Chinese healing arts, also called mind-body practice, are simple to learn, clinically proven to be effective, and can be practiced by anyone, anywhere, at any time. For 10 years, the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi has been a respected leader in mind-body practice training. Visit IIQTC.org. Empower yourself, empower others. Visit IIQTC.org for more information on mind body practice. IIQTC.org.
We're We're back on Fired Up with CJ. My guest today is Chaplain Craig Rennebohm, who has spent 24 years working with the homeless. Before we were taking a break, Craig was talking about his companionship program and the five practices, which were hospitality, neighboring, sitting with someone on a side-by-side stance alongside of them, listening and then accompanying them to the next step. Craig's information, if you would like to get some more information about the companionship program as well as his additional public appearances, you can go to www.mentalhealthchaplain.org. Craig has also authored a book called Souls in the Hands of a Tender God, and this book is available in local bookstores, through the web, and from Beacon Press. So, Craig, before we concluded our last break, I was mentioning you know, some of the responses. I know in Seattle it's been pretty heated about tent cities, and it reminded me of this, the second practice of neighboring. And it seems like, you know, the neighbors who are joining the tent cities, and for those of you who don't have tent cities, these are basically enclaves of people who set up tents as temporary houses within various neighborhoods in Seattle and a whole bunch of other cities and states. So what would you say to the neighbors that are fighting these homeless communities because they fear that these populations will increase and attract crime and that their property values will drop?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the first thing I'd say is that the research simply doesn't bear it out that these are centers of increased crime or that sort of thing. In fact, the opposite seems to be the case, that when you actually provide some kind of safe and supportive environment for folks who are homeless, that's helpful both to the folks who are homeless as well as to the surrounding community. And I think in most places, these are not just sort of random camps, but they are they're set up with some understanding with the neighborhood and the community. Maybe not everybody's in agreement, but also then generally the city is supportive and involved as well. And a basic reason people are putting together the tent cities is there simply is not enough shelter for everybody. We have 9,000 folks roughly in the Seattle King County area who are homeless on any given night, and we have shelter beds for about 6,000. So there are 3,000 people who need to find somewhere to go. They ride buses or they camp out in doorways, and a lot of folks feel much safer tenting and coming together to watch out for each other and over each other. So the tent cities usually are well-managed and safe, good places for folks to come together and maintain for the night.
So you're saying that really the safety concerns, and gosh, you know, there's actually going to be an increase in crime when you actually look at the statistics on crime in that area, whether they be burglaries or whatever, drug use or those types of things, that in fact that's not true. That's what I heard.
I don't know of research that actually supports that notion that tent cities are the basis for increased crime in a neighborhood or that sort of thing.
Okay.
Our experience here in Seattle is that the tent cities are well managed, and those who take the time to get to know the people actually come down and visit, find them very helpful, and helpful to learn about the folks and understand what they're doing. In fact, there was just an editorial in a newspaper recently. One of our tent cities is currently in the parking lot of a local church, and the business manager, who would certainly know if things were problematic, was writing very glowingly of the fact that, in this case, the tent city in the parking lot next door to the church, had some of the residents have been instrumental in helping them thwart a break-in into the church. So
wow.
I think maybe quite the opposite is true.
Yeah, so then also, let's say that you did want to visit the tent city. Is it something that you could just walk over and go and just hang out? I mean, how would one visit? Like, let's say during Thanksgiving, you know, maybe you wanted to drop some stuff off. Can you just go there, or how does it work?
Yeah, there are, you know, all sorts of places, not just the tent cities, but drop-in centers, meal programs, shelters, hygiene programs, clothing banks. There are many places where that have been set up to provide basic survival services to folks who are on the street. And I really encourage people as a kind of first step in getting involved to connect with whatever survival service, homeless service is nearest to them. Get to know the staff, offer to volunteer, make a contribution, and if possible, just spend a little time on site getting to know some of the folks that are using that survival resource in your neighborhood or community. Do a little companioning. And one of the things I wanted to mention about the companioning is that it's something we do in public. It's not a private relationship. We do companioning on the street, saying hello to folks. We do companioning at the door of the church on a Sunday morning. We do companioning at meal programs and shelters and drop-in centers. And it's as we actually make human contact with each other that I think that our understanding of homelessness really begins to change. We become part of the solution, begin to work with our neighbors who are on the streets to make a difference.
And what do you think, I mean, in terms of, I know that you said the basic step in neighboring is approaching folks, like so you could go to the tent city or a whole bunch of the other different ideas that you had and begin a conversation. But, I mean, are there certain things where, you know, really, if you're going to talk, don't talk about these things, talk about, I mean, are there certain parameters of helpful conversation or non-helpful conversation that you have?
One way I think we can get at that is to realize that everybody has a story. Each of us has a story, and our stories are very simple in their framework. We're in a present, we have a past, and we're moving into a future. It's probably pretty hard for any of us sometimes to talk much about our past, and we may not know what's kind of coming up ahead, but most of us can talk about what's going on in the present. You know, how's it going today? What's the weather's like? What challenges are you facing? What are you thinking about? What's on your mind? I try and stay in the present with people. And I also just try and converse about things we have in common, like the weather, to begin with, and affirm that you and I are human beings. We're sharing the same time and space here together. That's at the heart of neighboring, and that's where I begin to listen.
And do you think that those kind of questions, I mean, do they how are they usually received? Is it, oh, my gosh, someone's finally talking to me? Or how are they usually received on the other end?
Well, I think that all of us like to be listened to. And occasionally there will be a person who's very frightened, who maybe has been deeply wounded or has great difficulty communicating. But I think on the whole, folks appreciate a hello and how's it going, and are you from around here? Just an invitation to share a little of themselves, share a little of their story. And we as neighbors can do that pretty ideally because we don't have a lot of agenda. I mean, I'm not there to try and make you do this or change that. I'm there as a neighbor just to listen and to share the journey for a bit. And it isn't that we do the companioning all in a great big one gulp at a time. We, you know, say hello today. We may nod and smile and greet each other. We may take a few minutes to share a cup of coffee together a couple days from now, a week. Companioning is just kind of a basic, gentle art of being present with another person over time and sharing the journey together.
Right, and that was the interesting thing was that one of the stories that you have in the book, I think the gal that the character is named Mary, and was that I think that's the right name of the gal who you, like just every day you'd say hi, and that would be the only thing, you know, or across the road or just make contact.
There were a number of months that went by. There were weeks before we even said anything to each other. She would often just hunker against a building and keep her eyes down and turn away from anybody that was approaching, and all I did is I gently passed by and I'd nod or smile, and we just very slowly we began to build a nonverbal connection, just to be in present in each other's space, and eventually a hello and a nod and a hello back, and one day she was sitting there with a black book with gilt edges and a red ribbon down the middle, and I said, "That looks like a good book." And she looked up and nodded to me and said, "Yeah." I said, "It looks like the kind of book I use, too." And she was just kind of looking at her Bible, and we had, in this case, we had that particular piece of common ground together. But it was a very gentle, long-term process. That's what companioning is.
Yeah, and it seemed like as you were describing in the book, I mean, it could have taken weeks by the time you actually had the conversation about the book. Is that right? I mean, how long was it from the time that these nods and everything came to a point where you even said anything out of your...
Well, I think it was a couple of months before we actually had that brief conversation about the book.
Wow. I can't wait to hear more about that. Oh, I'm sorry. We're going to have to take a break.
We're so used to fixing things, getting things done, solutions right away. Sometimes new territory for us to slow down and just explore what it means to be present and share the journey without a whole lot of agenda with a fellow human being.
And I think I've done that myself because I've now gone past my break. So you're listening to Fired Up with CJ. I've been too present here with Greg Rennebaum, whose pioneering work with the homeless is known around the U.S. and overseas. You can find out more about our guests and listen to this and past shows by going to www.firedupwithcj.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Ugh, aren't you tired of the same old negative vibe?
Hey, Valerie, have you heard about TransformationTalkRadio.com?
No, what's that?
Dr. Pat is launching a new network. And
Dr. Pat?
Dr. Pat.
How many hours is she going to be on?
It won't be all Dr. Pat. She'll be joined by her friends, transformative hosts from around the globe. TransformationTalkRadio.com is a 24/7 network.
24 hours of Dr. Pat and her guests?
No, 24 hours of Dr. Pat and her hosts.
Oh, very good. When does this start?
This starts in August.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited. Where is it going to be broadcast?
You're going to be able to hear her in Seattle, Boston, Connecticut, New York, Rhode Island, on over 300 cable radio stations, and on the Internet everywhere. Listen live at TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Great. We should spread the word.
Absolutely. Spread the word. Go to TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
The 19th Annual Women of Wisdom Conference is February 17th through the 21st. Our theme is Women Arise, Unveil the Power of the Divine Feminine. Special guests are Susan Weed, Carolyn Sutherland, and many others, sharing their gifts through experiential events all weekend long. Join our email list at womenofwisdom.org and watch for announcements about the conference. That's womenofwisdom.org.
TransformationTalkRadio.com, transforming the world one listener at a time.
Fired Up with CJ. My guest today is Chaplain Craig Rennebaum, who has spent 24 years working with the homeless. Before we took a break, we were talking about his companionship program. You can find out more about the companionship program by going to www.mentalhealthchaplain.org. And there's also information about Craig's public appearances. And you can also read about the companionship program and Craig's book called Souls in the Hands of a Tender God. So welcome back, Craig. I truly find this stuff, I mean, it's fascinating. And it's so great for me, at least, to be educated. And I think for others to be educated on what the reality is. There's so many misconceptions out there, I think.
Absolutely. There's a tremendous amount to learn, and there's a lot of stigma and myth about homelessness that I think we have to kind of try and cut through.
Yeah, and before we were on break, we were talking about Mary, and I'm shocked to hear that it was a couple of months. But this companionship program, I mean, you don't have to just go launching in and talking about the weather right away. In fact, that might not be the best thing. You have to read each situation.
You can nod and say hello, right? And do what neighbors do. It can take time to build a relationship, to build up a relationship. The nice thing is that the relationship is there. We're already connected with each other. And in my own sort of faith framework, I really believe that with each person, there's a spirit of healing and support and care at work in each of our lives. And so when I begin to approach someone who's on the street, it's not that I'm sort of taking care or healing or reconnection to that person. I frame it in terms of I have the privilege of beginning to share with that person a journey in which healing and support and care is already at work, and I can add to the deep spiritual resources that are available to that person and indeed to all of us. Mm-hmm. But I guess that's why I'm a chaplain.
Yeah, I think it's hard for, you know, it's hard for perhaps people who aren't trained. I mean, we may have faith and we may have a deep care, but sometimes I think that there's, you know, there's fear. You know, if someone's yelling and screaming on the street, it's hard for me to kind of go over and nod and provide a warm smile.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of boundaries do you...
I really don't encourage people to move in if they don't feel safe. But even then, we can, at a distance, hold that person in thought and care, prayer. In the companionship training, I do an exercise in which we use an old Quaker practice and tradition, and that is to see each person bathed in a light of love and worth and infinite value. And so as I work out on the street, or as I am in a shelter or meal program, I just stop and try and see each person there as standing in a light of incredible love, worth, and value. And it begins to change how I approach that individual. And that is a spiritual practice. That's an act of faith. But I think it's one that we can all begin to explore and experience, not just with folks who are homeless in our midst, but just with each other.
Yeah, I mean, the hard thing, because I have a soft spot, and what happens to me is I feel like I open up too much. I mean, I do the thing that I don't know if I actually, you know, in my mind imagine a big light or anything like that, mm-hmm. but I do know that I have an open heart. And sometimes mm-hmm. I don't know whether that attracts almost more kind of energy that I'm not ready to handle, having proper boundaries. I'm sure that probably crosses your path as well when you have people in the companionship program. I mean, how do you work with boundaries so that you're not almost too open to where, I mean, I had one person who kept on coming over, then they brought their friends over for meals, and then it was like, you know, it was like almost a soup kitchen out of my house.
Sure. And I think we're all on a continuum, and some of us are maybe more open, sensitive, begin to connect more quickly than others. But all of us have limits. And one of the things we talk about in the companionship training is how do we acknowledge our limits, our physical limits, our emotional capacities, our knowledge, our limits as persons, or spiritual limits. And I think, again, in our culture, it may be hard to say, well, you know, I'm not able to do things. I've got limits. I need to keep some boundaries. But I think it's important when we're companioning that we acknowledge our limits, our finitude, and not to try and take on too much. And I actually use a little story from Miss Manners, the advice columnist in the paper. She had a woman who wrote in and said, we don't have any time together. We're always doing this, that, fundraisers, et cetera. Miss Manners just counseled her. Somebody asks you to do something, just say, I'm not able to do that. If they keep persisting, just say, I'm not able to do that. Pretty soon people quit questioning your disability. And I think all of us who are wanting to help also need to be able to say, I'm not able to do that, and honor our own limits and our own need to care for ourselves so that we have a self to care for others.
Right. That's a good one. That's probably my biggest challenge. And I think that that's important to be clear with what your boundaries are, how much money you're willing to give, how much time is appropriate. Because if you don't, I think you can actually become too drained as well, and then you don't have time to give.
And the answer really is not for one or another of us to try and be the dramatic hero. I think that the real answer lies in all of us doing what we're able to do and for all of us to work together to solve these issues and care for one another in community. And it's not that one of us or another has to be doing it all or can do it all.
Right. And I think that that's the key thing, is that is really just knowing what we're capable of. And just as a wrap-up, because we're coming to a close of the show, it happened so quickly. You know, in terms of the next steps, I had asked you earlier, what are three next steps that people can take? And I heard, one, get educated. Be a member of your local NAMI chapter. And organize a mental health team in your local congregation, company, or community organization. All of which I think people can find out a little bit more on your website. Is that right, Craig? They can go to your website and know about it.
You know, NAMI, NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness, a ton of resources on mental health issues, mental illness. We all have some part of the community where we can begin to connect and work with others to respond to the mental health needs and the homelessness of our neighbors.
Craig, hey, I really want to thank you. I mean, your work is just a beautiful piece of work, and it's something I think that you're right, we all have the capacity to do. And it just takes someone like yourself to have the courage to make it happen and to put a program together. So thank you. The world is a better place with you in it.
Well, thank you very much, CJ. My privilege and delighted to be with you today.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Fire It Up with CJ. Please join me every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 3 p.m. Central Standard Time, and 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Have a great week. Happy Thanksgiving. And go out there. Start going to your tent city or some of the homeless folks and start trying one of these things, or even if it's to just give a nod to someone, a homeless person on the street. Thanks again, Craig.
You bet.
Okay. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Fire It Up with CJ. Tune in each week on Transformation Talk Radio at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for more of Fire It Up with CJ. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
So this may sound simple, but when you're planning a road trip, you have to figure out where you're going first. With the Take Shape for Life program, the destination is living life at optimal health. So what does that mean? It means more energy. It means less medications. And yes, it means losing the extra pounds, which is actually part of the getting there. Talk to a Take Shape for Life health coach who's been there. Listen to their story and their journey. Call 877-520-SIMPLE. That's 877-520-SIMPLE. Results will vary. Talk to your doctor before starting program. Call for details.
The 19th Annual Women of Wisdom Conference is February 17th through the 21st. Our theme is Women Arise, Unveil the Power of the Divine Feminine. Special guests are Susan Weed, Carolyn Sutherland, and many others, sharing their gifts through experiential events all weekend long. Join our email list at womenofwisdom.org and watch for announcements about the conference. That's womenofwisdom.org.
Ugh, aren't you tired of the same old negative vibe?
Hey, Valerie, have you heard about TransformationTalkRadio.com?
No, what's that?
Dr. Pat is launching a new network. And
Dr. Pat?
Dr. Pat.
How many hours is she going to be on?
It won't be all Dr. Pat. She'll be joined by her friends, transformative hosts from around the globe. TransformationTalkRadio.com is a 24/7 network.
24 hours of Dr. Pat and her guests?
No, 24 hours of Dr. Pat and her hosts.
Oh, very good. When does this start?
This starts in August.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited. Where is it going to be broadcast?
You're going to be able to hear her in Seattle, Boston, Connecticut, New York, Rhode Island, on over 300 cable radio stations, and on the Internet everywhere. Listen live at TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Great. We should spread the word.
Absolutely. Spread the word. Go to TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
The 19th Annual Women of Wisdom Conference is February 17th through the 21st. Our theme is Women Arise, Unveil the Power of the Divine Feminine. Special guests are Susan Weed, Carolyn Sutherland, and many others, sharing their gifts through experiential events all weekend long. Join our email list at womenofwisdom.org and watch for announcements about the conference. That's womenofwisdom.org.
Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
Thank you.